If we were to expel him, it's entirely possible that the economy would collapse. Then, I am at his mercy. To some degree, yes, Your Majesty. Zakath sighed mournfully. I wish I had not gotten out of bed this morning. Both Belgarath and Polgara looked troubled when they returned with Eriond, close behind them. The blonde young man, however, looked as unconcerned as always.
What did he say?
Geryon asked. He didn't like it too much, Belgarath said. But he finally agreed. General Ateska, how many troops do you have here in Dar Shiva?
Several hundred thousand. They are in enclaves like this one up and down the east bank of the Magan. The bulk of our forces are across the river in Peldane. We can summon them on short notice.
Leave them where they are. Once you have delayed Ervon long enough to allow the Darshivan army to catch up with him, withdraw all your men to this enclave.
It is hardly big enough for that many men, Ancient One,
Ateska pointed out. You had better expand it, then. Aldor has agreed to protect this enclave. He didn't say anything about any of the others. Bring your men here. He will keep the demons away.
Oh, Braedor asked curiously.
Demons cannot bear the presence of a god. Neither Nahas nor Morja will come within 10 leagues of this place.
He's actually going to be here?
Only in a rather peculiar sense of the word. Once the enclave is expanded, that ditch of yours is going to be filled with a kind of blue light. Tell your men to stay out of it. Aldor is still not fond of Angarax, and peculiar things might happen to any soldier who strays into that light. The old man suddenly grinned at Zakath.
You might find it interesting to know that your whole army here in Dar Shiva will be at least nominally subject to Aldor for a while.
He's never had an army before, so it is a little hard to say what he might decide to do with one.
Is your grandfather always like this?
Zakath asked Geryon.
Usually, yes.
Geryon stood up, moving his fingers slightly. Then he crossed to the far side of the tent. Belgarath followed him.
What happened out there, grandfather?
Geryon whispered.
Belgarath shrugged. We talked with Aldor, and he promised to protect Zakath's army.
Geryon shook his head.
No. Something else happened, too. Both you and Aunt Paul were looking very strange when you came back, and why did Eriond go with you?
It's a long story, the old man replied evasively.
I've got time. I think I had better know what's going on.
No. As a matter of fact, you had better not. Aldor was quite emphatic about that. If you know what's happening, it might interfere with what you have to do.
I thought we had exhausted that tired old excuse a long time ago. I'm grown now. You don't have to try to keep me stupid.
I'll tell you what, Geryon. Since you are the child of light, why don't you go talk with Aldor yourself? He might even decide to tell you. But that is up to him. He told me to keep my mouth shut, and I am not going to disobey my master, whether you like it or not.
And he turned and went back to rejoin the others. Chapter 19
I still don't understand why I have to look so shabby,
Zakath said as he re-entered the pavilion. He wore a battered breastplate over a mail shirt and rust-splotched helmet, devoid of any kind of decoration. A patched brown cloak was draped over his shoulders, and a plain leather-bound sword hung at his side.
"Explain it to him, Silk," Belgarath said. "You are the expert at this sort of thing."
"It's not really all that complicated," Silk told the Emperor.
It's fairly standard practice for travelers to hire a few mercenary soldiers to act as armed guards. Mercenaries don't usually spend all that much time taking care of their equipment, so we had to make you look a bit down at the heels. All you and Geryon have to do is wear armor and ride in front looking dangerous. A faint smile touched the Malorian's pallid features.
I didn't think anonymity would require such pains.
Silk grinned at him. Actually, it's harder to be anonymous than it is to be a Grand Duke. Now, please don't be offended, Zakath, but we are all going to forget we know how to say Your Majesty. Someone might make a slip at the wrong time.
That's perfectly all right, Keldar, Zakath replied. All the Majesties grate on my ears sometimes anyway.
Silk looked closely at their newest recruit's face.
You really ought to spend more time outside, you know. You're as pale as a sheet.
I can take care of that, Silk, Polgara said. I'll mix up something to make him look suitably weather-beaten.
Oh, one other thing, Silk added. Your face is on every coin in Meloria, isn't it?
You should know. You have got most of them, haven't you?
Well, I have picked up a few here and there, Silk said modestly. Let's cover up that famous face with whiskers. Stop shaving.
Keldar, I have not shaved my own face since my beard sprouted. I would not even know how to hold the razor.
You let somebody else near your throat with a razor? Isn't that a trifle imprudent?
Does that more or less cover everything?
Belgoroth asked the little Drasnian.
Oh, that covers the basics, Silk replied. I can coach him on the finer details as we go along.
All right, then, the old man looked around at them. We are likely to encounter people out there. Some of them might be hostile, but most of them will probably just be trying to stay out of harm's way, so they won't bother a group of ordinary travelers.
He looked directly at Zakath.
Silk should be able to talk us out of most situations, but if we get into serious confrontations, I want you to fall back a bit and let the rest of us handle things. You are out of practice with your weapons, and I did not go to all of the trouble of finding you to lose you in some meaningless skirmish. I can still carry my own weight, Belgarath. I'm sure you can. But let's not risk it right at first. Saradus might be very unhappy if we don't have you with us in one piece when we get to Kel.
Zakath shrugged, walked over and sat on the bench beside Geryon. The Raven King was dressed in his mail shirt, and he was sliding the snug-fitting leather sleeve over the hilt of Iron Grip's sword. Zakath was actually grinning, and the unaccustomed expression made him look 10 years younger. Geryon was uncomfortably reminded of Laldoran.
I think you're actually enjoying this, aren't you?
For some reason, I feel almost like a young man again, Zakath replied. Is it always like this? Subterfuge and a little danger, and this wild sense of exhilaration?
More or less, Geryon replied. Sometimes there's more than just a little danger, though.
I can live with that. My life has been tediously secure so far.
Even when Naradus poisoned you back in Tol Mergos?
I was too sick to know what was going on, Zakath said. I envy you, Geryon. You have had a wildly exciting life.
He frowned slightly.
Something rather peculiar is happening to me, he confessed. Ever since I agreed to meet Saradus at Kel, I have felt as if some vast weight had been lifted off of me. The whole world looks fresh and new now. I have absolutely no control over my life, and yet I am as happy as a fish in deep water. It is irrational, but I can't help it.
Geryon looked rather closely at him. "Don't misunderstand," he said. "I'm not deliberately trying to be mystical about this, but you are probably happy because you are doing what you are supposed to do. It happens to all of us. It's a part of that different way of looking at things Aunt Paul mentioned earlier, and it's one of the rewards she talked about."
"That's a little obscure for me," Sakath admitted.
"Give it some time," Geryon told him. "It comes to you, gradually." General Ataska entered the tent with Braedor close behind him.
"The horses are ready, Your Majesty," he reported in a neutral tone.
Geryon could tell by Ataska's expression that he still strongly disapproved of this whole business. The general turned toward Durnik.
"I have added a few more pack animals, Goodman. Yours were fairly well loaded down."
"Thank you, General," Durnik replied.
"I'm going to be out of touch, Ataska. So I am leaving you in charge here," Sakath said. "I will try to get word to you from time to time, but there may be long periods when you won't hear from me."
"Yes, Your Majesty," Ataska replied.
"You know what to do, though. Let Braedor handle civil matters and you deal with the military situation. Get the troops back here to this enclave as soon as Ervan and the Darshivans are engaged. And keep in touch with Malzeth."
He tugged a large signet ring off of his finger.
"Use this if you need to seal any official documents." "Such documents require Your Majesty's signature,"
Ataska reminded him. "Braedor can forge it. He writes my name better than I do myself."
"Your Majesty," Braedor protested.
"Don't play innocent with me, Braedor. I have known about your experiments in penmanship. Take care of my cat while I'm gone, and see if you can find homes for the rest of those kittens."
"Yes, Your Majesty."
"Anything else that needs my attention before I leave?" "One thing, Your Majesty," Ataska said. "A disciplinary matter." "Can't you take care of it?" Sakath asked a bit irritably. He was obviously impatient to be off.
"I can, Your Majesty. But you have sort of placed the man under your personal protection, so I thought I would consult with you before I took action."
"Who am I protecting?" Sakath looked puzzled. "It is a corporal from the Malzeth garrison, Your Majesty. A man named Actas. He was drunk on duty."
"Actas? I don't recall."
"It was that corporal who had been demoted just before we arrived in Malzeth,"
Tenedra reminded him.
"The one whose wife was making such a scene in that side street?"
"Oh, yes," Sakath said. "Now I remember. Drunk, you say? He's not supposed to drink anymore." "I doubt if he could drink any more, Your Majesty," Ataska said with a faint smile. "At least, not right now. He is as drunk as a lord."
"Is he nearby?"
"Just outside, Your Majesty."
Sakath sighed.
"I guess you had better bring him in."
He looked at Belgorath.
"This should only take a moment or two," he apologized.
Geryon remembered the scrawny corporal as soon as the fellow staggered into the tent. The corporal tried to come to attention without much success. Then he attempted to bang his breastplate in salute, but hit himself in the nose with his fist instead.
"Yeah, Imperial Majesty," he slurred.
"What am I going to do with you, Actas?"
Sakath said wearily.
"I've made a beast of myself, Your Majesty,"
Actus confessed.
An Arsinobis?
Yes, Sakath agreed. You have.
He turned his head away.
Please, don't breathe on me, Actus. Your mouth smells like a reopened grave. Take him out and sober him up, Ateska.
I will personally throw him in the river, your majesty.
Ateska was trying to suppress a grin.
You are enjoying this, aren't you?
Me, your majesty?
Zakath's eyes narrowed slyly.
Well, Zinedra, he said, he is your responsibility, too. What do we do with him?
She waved one little hand negligently.
Hang him,
she said, in an indifferent tone. She looked more closely at her hand.
Great Nedra,
she exclaimed.
We've broken another fingernail.
Corporal Actus's eyes were bulging and his mouth was suddenly agape. Trembling violently, he fell to his knees.
Please, Your Majesty,
he begged, suddenly cold sober.
Please!
Zakath squinted at the Riven Queen, who sat mourning the broken nail.
Take him outside, Ateska. I will give you orders for his final disposition in a moment.
Ateska saluted and hauled the blubbering Actus to his feet.
You weren't really serious, were you, Zinedra?
Zakath asked after the two men had left.
Oh, of course not. I'm not a monster, Zakath. Clean him up and send him back to his wife.
She tapped one finger thoughtfully on her chin.
But erect a gibbet in the street in front of his house. Give him something to think about the next time he gets thirsty.
You actually married this woman?
Zakath exclaimed to Geryon. It was sort of arranged by our families, Geryon replied with aplomb. We didn't have much to say about it.
No, be nice, Geryon,
Zinedra said with unruffled calm. They mounted their horses outside the pavilion and rode through the camp to the drawbridge spanning the deep, stake-studded ditch that formed a part of the outer fortifications. When they reached the far side of the ditch, Zakath let out an explosive breath of relief. What is it? Geryon asked him.
I was half afraid that somebody might have found a way to keep me there.
He glanced a bit apprehensively back over his shoulder.
Do you think we could possibly gallop for a ways? I would hate to have them catch up with me.
Geryon began to have misgivings at that point. Are you sure you're all right? He asked suspiciously.
I have never felt better, or more free, in my entire life, Zakath declared.
I was afraid of that, Geryon muttered.
What?
Just keep moving at a canter, Zakath. There is something I need to discuss with Belgarath. I'll be right back. He reined Kretchen in and rode back to where his grandfather and his aunt rode side by side, deep in conversation. He is absolutely out of control, he told them. What has happened to him? It is the first time in his entire life that he has not had the weight of half of the world on his shoulders, Geryon, Polgara replied calmly. He will settle down. Just give him a day or so. Do we have a day or so? He's acting exactly the way Leldoran would, or maybe even Mandaralan. Can we afford that?
Talk to him, Belgarath suggested. Just keep talking. Recite the Book of Elorn to him if you have to.
But I don't know the Book of Elorn, Grandfather, Geryon objected.
Yes, you do. It's in your blood. You could have recited it, letter perfect in your cradle. Now, get back up there before he gets completely out of hand.
Geryon swore and rode back to rejoin Zakath.
In trouble? Silk asked him.
I don't want to talk about it. Belden was waiting for them around the next bend in the road.
Well, the grotesque little hunchback said, it seems to have worked. But why did you bring him along?
Serratus persuaded him to come with us, Belgarath replied.
What gave you the idea of going to her?
It was worth a try. Paul told me about a few of the things she said to him back in Tol Murgos. She seems to have some sort of interest in him. I didn't really think he was supposed to join us, though. What did she say to him?
She told him that he would die if he did not come with us.
I imagine that got his attention. Hello, Zakath.
Do we know each other?
I know you by sight, anyway. I've seen you parading through the streets of Malzeth a few times.
This is my brother Belden, Belgarath introduced the misshapen dwarf.
I didn't know you had any brothers.
The relationship is a bit obscure, but we serve the same master, so that makes us brothers in a peculiar sort of way. There used to be 7 of us, but there are only 4 of us left now.
Zakath frowned slightly.
Your name rings a bell, Master Belden, he said. Aren't you the one whose picture is posted on every tree for 6 leagues in any direction from Malyaska?
I believe that's me, all right. I make Irvon a little nervous. He seems to think that I want to split him up the middle.
Do you?
I've thought about it a time or two. I think what I'd really like to do, though, is yank out his guts, hang them on a thorn bush, and invite in some vultures. I'm sure he'd find watching them eat very entertaining.
Zakath blanched slightly.
Vultures have to eat, too, the hunchback shrugged. Oh, speaking of eating, Paul, do you have anything decent around? All I've had in the last few days was a very scrawny rat and a nest full of crow's eggs. I don't think there's a rabbit or a pigeon left in the whole of Darsheva.
This is a very unusual fellow, Zakath said to Geryon.
He gets more unusual the more you get to know him, Geryon smiled slightly. He frightened Irvon almost into sanity at Asheba.
He was exaggerating, wasn't he? About the vultures, I mean.
Probably not. He fully intends to gut Torak's last disciple like a butchered hog.
Zakath's eyes grew bright. You think he might want some help?
He asked eagerly. Were any of your ancestors possibly Arendish? Geryon asked suspiciously.
I don't understand the question.
Never mind, Geryon sighed. Elden squatted in the dirt at the roadside, tearing at the carcass of a cold roast chicken.
Ah, you burnt it, Paul, he accused.
I didn't cook it, Uncle, she replied primly.
Why not? Did you forget how?
I have a wonderful recipe for boiled dwarf, she told him. I'm almost sure I could find someone willing to eat that sort of thing.
You're losing your edge again, Paul, he said, wiping his greasy fingers on the front of his ragged tunic. Your mind's getting as flabby as your bottom.
Geryon restrained Zakath with one hand when the Malorian Emperor's face grew outraged. It's a personal thing, he cautioned. I wouldn't interfere. They've been insulting each other for thousands of years. It's a peculiar kind of love, I think.
Love?
Listen, Geryon suggested. You might learn something. Aelorns aren't like Angoraks. We don't bow very often, and we sometimes hide our feelings with jokes.
Polgara? Is an Aelorn?
Zakath sounded surprised. Use your eyes, man. Her hair's dark, I'll grant you, but her twin sister was as blonde as a wheat field. Look at her cheekbones and her jaw. I rule a kingdom of Aelorns, and I know what they look like. She and Lazelle could be sisters.
Now that you mention it, they do look a bit alike, don't they? How is it I never saw that before?
You hired Braedor to be your eyes, Geryon replied, shifting in his mail shirt. I don't trust other people's eyes all that much.
Is Beldon an Aelorn too?
Nobody knows what Beldon is. He's so deformed that you can't put a name to him.
Poor fellow.
Don't waste your pity on Beldon, Geryon replied. He's 6,000 years old, and he could turn you into a frog if he felt like it. He can make it snow or rain, and he's far, far smarter than Belgorath.
But he's so grubby,
Sakath said, eyeing the filthy dwarf. He's grubby because he doesn't care, Geryon said. This is the form he uses to go among us. It's ugly, so he doesn't waste time on it. His other form is so magnificent it would blind you.
Other form?
It's a peculiarity of ours. Sometimes a human form isn't practical for some of the things we have to do. Beldon likes to fly, so he spends most of his time as a blue-banded hawk.
I am a falconer, Geryon. I don't believe there is such a bird.
Tell him that. Geryon pointed at the ugly dwarf ripping the chicken apart with his teeth by the roadside. You could have cut it up first, uncle, Polgara said.
Why?
He took another huge bite. It is more polite.
Paul, I taught you how to fly and how to hunt. Don't you try to teach me how to eat.
I don't think eat is the right word, uncle. You are not an eater. You are a revener.
We all do it our own way, Paul, he belched. You do it with a silver fork off a porcelain plate, and I do it with my talons and beak in a ditch beside the road. It all gets to the same place, no matter how you do it.
He raked a patch of burned skin off of the chicken leg he was holding in one hand.
This isn't too bad, he conceded. At least not after you get down to the real meat.
Anything up ahead? Belgorath asked him.
A few troops, some terrified civilians, and a Grolem now and then. That's about it.
Any demons?
I didn't see any. Of course, that doesn't mean they are not lurking around somewhere. You know how it is with demons. Are you going to travel at night again?
Belgorath thought about it.
I don't think so, he decided. It takes too long to do it that way, and time is running out on us. Let's just make a run for it.
Suit yourself.
Beldon discarded the remains of the chicken and stood up.
I'll keep an eye out up ahead, and let you know when you're about to run into trouble.
The hunchback bent, spread his arms, and soared up into the murky sky.
Torak's teeth!
Zakath exclaimed.
He is a blue-banded hawk.
He invented it himself, Belgorath said. He didn't like the regular colors. Let's move along.
Although it was nearly summer, there was a dreary chill hanging over Darsheva. Geryon could not be certain if it was the result of the prevailing overcast, or if it derived from some other more ominous source. The white snags of dead trees lined the road, and the air was thick with the reek of fungus, decay, and stagnant water. They passed long deserted villages tumbled now into ruins. A roadside temple seemed to huddle mournfully with fungus, creeping up its walls like some loathsome disease. Its doors gaped open, and the polished steel mask of the face of Torak, which should have surmounted them, was gone. Belgorath reined in his horse and dismounted.
I'll be right back, he said.
He went up the steps of the temple and looked inside. Then he turned and came back.
I thought they might have done that.
Done what, father?
They have taken Torak's face down from the wall behind the altar. There is a blank mask there now. They are waiting to see what the new god looks like.
They took shelter for the night beside the half-tumbled wall of a ruined village. They built no fire, and traded off standing watch. At first light, the next morning, they pushed on. The countryside grew more bleak and foreboding with each passing mile. About mid-morning, Belden swooped in, flared his wings, and settled to the earth. He shimmered into his own form and stood waiting for them.
"There are some troops blocking the road about a mile ahead," he announced.
"Any chance of getting around them?" Belgarath asked.
"I doubt it. The country's pretty flat there, and all the vegetation's been dead for years."
"How many are there?" Silk asked.
15 or so. They've got a Grolem with them."
"Any idea which side they are on?"
"Well, they're not that distinctive."
"Do you want me to see if I can talk our way past them?" Silk offered. Belgarath looked at Belden. "Are they deliberately blocking the road? Or are they just camped on it?"
"They've built a barricade out of dead logs."
"That answers that, then. Talk isn't going to do us any good." He mulled it over.
"We could wait until dark and then slip around them,"
Velvet suggested. "We would lose a whole day that way," Belgarath replied. "I don't see any help for it. We are going to have to go through them. Try not to kill any more of them than you absolutely have to."
"That gets right to the point, doesn't it?" Zakath said wryly to Geryon. "There's no sense in trying to surprise them, I suppose," Belgarath asked Belden.
The dwarf shook his head.
"They'll see you coming for at least half a mile."
He went to the side of the road, wrenched a half-rotten stump out of the ground, and pounded it against a rock until all of the decayed wood had been knocked loose. The gnarled taproot made a fearsome-looking cudgel.
"Well, I guess we had better go have a look," Belgarath said bleakly.
They rode on to the crest of the hill, and looked down the road, toward the barricade and the troops standing behind it. Zakath peered at them.
"Darshivans," he said.
"How can you tell from this distance?" Silk asked him.
"By the shape of their helmets," the Malorian narrowed his eyes. "Darshivan soldiers are not notoriously brave, and they get very little in the way of training. Do you think there might be some way we can lure them out from behind that barricade?"
Geryon looked down at the soldiers crouched behind their logs.
"I'd say they've been told not to let anybody pass," he said. "What if we charge them, and then at the last minute swing out and around them? They all run for their horses, then we turn around and charge back at them. They'll be confused and milling around, and we'll be able to pin them up against their own barricade. It shouldn't be too hard to put a fair number of them on the ground. The rest should run at that point."
"That's not a bad plan, Geryon. You are quite a tactician. Have you had any formal military training?"
"No, I just picked it up."
In a land of brittle dead trees, a lance was quite out of the question. So Geryon strapped his shield to his left arm and drew his sword.
"All right," Belgarath said. "Let's give it a try. It might hold down the casualties."
"One other thing," Silk added. "I think we should make a special point of not letting any of them get on a horse. A man on foot can't go for help very fast. If we run off their horses, we could be out of the area before they can bring in reinforcements."
"I will take care of that," Belgarath said. "All right, let's go."
They urged their horses into a gallop and charged down the road toward the barricade, brandishing their weapons. As they pounded down the hill, Geryon saw Zakath pulling a curious-looking leather half-glove clad with steel onto his right hand. Just before they reached the barricade and the alarmed soldiers standing behind it, they veered sharply to the left, then galloped around the obstruction and back onto the road.
"After them!"
a black-robed Grolem screamed at the startled troops.
Don't let them escape!
Geryon rode on past the soldiers' picketed horses, then wheeled Kretchen around. He charged back with the others close on his heels and rode full into the face of the confused Darshivans. He did not really want to kill any of them, so he laid about him with the flat of the blade rather than the edge. He put three of them down as he crashed through their ranks. Behind him he could hear the sound of blows and cries of pain. The Grolem rose before him, and he could feel the black-robed man drawing in his will. He did not falter, but simply rode the priest down. Then he wheeled again. Toth was laying about him with his heavy staff, and Durnik was busily caving in helmets with the butt of his axe. Zakath, however, was leaned far over in his saddle. He had no weapon in his hand, but rather was smashing his metal-clad fist into the faces of the Darshivan soldiers. The glove appeared to be quite effective. Then, from where the soldiers' horses were picketed, there came a blood-curdling howl. The great silver wolf was snapping and snarling at the horses. They lunged back in panic. The picket rope snapped, and they fled.
"Let's go!"
Geryon shouted to his friends, and they galloped once again through the center of the Darshivans, and on down the road to rejoin Polgarath, Zenedra, Velvet, and Eriond. Belgaroth loped after them, then changed into his own form, and walked back to his horse.
"It seems to have worked more or less the way we'd planned,"
Zakath noted. He was panting, and his forehead was dewed with sweat.
"I seem to be a bit out of condition, though."
"Too much sitting down," Silk said. "What's that thing you've got on your hand?"
"It's called a cestus," the Malorian replied, pulling it off. "I am a little rusty with my sword, so I thought this might work just as well, particularly since Belgarath wanted to keep down the fatalities." "Did we kill anybody?"
Durnik asked.
"Two,"
Zadi admitted. He held up his small dagger. "It is a little hard to unpoison a knife." "And one other," Silk told the smith. "He was running up behind you with a spear, so I threw a knife at him."
"It couldn't be helped," Belgarath said. "Now, let's get out of here."
They continued at a gallop for several miles, then slowed back to a canter again. They took shelter that night in a sizable stand of dead trees. Durnik and Toth dug a shallow pit and built a small fire in it. After the tents were pitched, Geryon and Zakath walked to the edge of the trees to keep watch on the road.
"Is it always like this?"
Zakath asked quietly.
"Like what?"
"All this sneaking and hiding."
"Usually. Belgarath tries to avoid trouble whenever he can. He doesn't like to risk people in random skirmishes. Most of the time, we're able to avoid the kind of thing that happened this morning. Silk and Sadi, too, for that matter, have lied us out of some very tight spots," he smiled faintly. "Up in Versebo, Silk bribed our way past a group of soldiers with a pouch full of brass Malorian halfpennies."
"But they are virtually worthless."
"That's what Silk said, but we were quite a ways past the soldiers before they opened the pouch."
Then they heard a chilling howl.
"A wolf?" Zakath asked. "Belgarath again?"
"No. That wasn't a wolf. Let's go back. I think Irvan's managed to outflank General Ateska."
"What makes you think so?"
"That was a hound."
Chapter 20 They walked carefully through the forest of dead snags, avoiding as best they could the litter of fallen limbs and twigs on the ground. The faint glow from Durnik's sunken fire guided them, and Geryon knew it would serve as a dim beacon for the hounds as well. Zakath's euphoria seemed to have evaporated. His expression now was wary, and he walked with his hand on his sword hilt. They entered the small clearing where the others were seated around the fire pit.
"There's a hound out there," Geryon said quietly. "It howled once."
"Could you make out what it was saying?"
Belgarath asked, his voice tense.
I don't speak its language, Grandfather. It seemed to be some kind of a call, though.
Probably to the rest of the pack, the old man grunted. The hounds don't hunt alone very often.
The glow from our fire is fairly visible, Geryon pointed out.
I'll take care of that right away, Durnick said, starting to shovel dirt into the fire pit. Could you pinpoint the hound's location at all? Belgarath asked.
It was some distance away. I think it's out there on the road.
Following our trail? Silk asked.
It's following something. I could pick up that much.
If the hound is following us, I can divert it with some of that powder I used back at Ashaba, Tzadi suggested.
What do you think?
Belgarath asked Belden. The dwarf squatted on the ground, absently scratching an obscure diagram in the dirt with a broken stick.
It wouldn't work, he said finally. The hounds aren't entirely dogs, so they're not going to just blindly follow the one in the lead. Once they pinpoint our location, they'll spread out and come at us from all sides. We're going to have to come up with something else.
Fairly soon, I'd think, Silk added, looking around nervously. Polgar removed her blue cloak and handed it to Durnick.
I'll deal with it, she said calmly.
What have you got in mind, Paul?
Belgarath asked suspiciously.
I haven't decided yet, old wolf. Maybe I'll just make it up as I go along, the way you do sometimes.
She drew herself up, and the air around her shimmered with an odd luminescence. She was winging her way off among the dead white trees even before the light had faded.
I hate it when she does that,
Belgarath muttered.
You do it all the time, Belden said.
That's different.
Zakath was staring at the ghostly shape of the disappearing white owl.
That's uncanny, he shuddered.
Then he looked at Geryon.
I can't say that I understand all this concern, he confessed. You people, at least some of you, are sorcerers. Can't you just...
He left it hanging.
No, Geryon shook his head.
Why not?
It makes too much noise. Oh, not the sort of noise ordinary people can hear. But we can hear it, and so can the Grolems. If we tried to do it that way, we'd have every Grolem in this part of Dar Shiva down our necks. Sorcery's an overrated thing, Zakath. I'll grant you we can do things that other people can't, but there are so many restrictions on us that sometimes it's not worth the trouble, unless you're in a hurry.
I didn't know that, Zakath admitted. Are the hounds as big as they say they are?
Probably even bigger, Silk replied. They're about the size of small horses.
You are a droll fellow, Keldar, Zakath said. So I think I'd have to see that to believe it.
You'd better hope that you don't get that close. Belgarath looked narrowly at the Malorian.
You don't believe in very much, do you? He asked. What I can see, Zakath shrugged. I've had most of the belief washed out of me over the years.
That could prove to be a problem, the old man said, scratching at his cheek.
The time might come when we will have to do something in a hurry, and we won't have time for explanations, and you won't have time to stand around gaping in astonishment. I think this might be a good time to fill you in on a few things.
I will listen to you, Zakath said. I don't promise to believe everything you say, though. Go ahead.
I will let Geryon do it. I want to keep in touch with Paul. Why don't you two go back to the edge of the woods and keep watch?
Geryon can fill you in there. Try not to be skeptical. Just on principle. We will see, Zakath replied.
During the next hour, as Geryon and Zakath crouched behind a fallen tree at the edge of the woods, the Emperor of Meloria had his credulity stretched to the limits. Geryon spoke in a half-whisper, even as he kept his eyes and ears alert. He began by briefly sketching in the Book of Aelorn, then went on to a few salient points from the Mrin Codex. Then, so far as he knew it, he described the early life of Belgarath the Sorcerer. And then he got down to business. He explained the possibilities and the limitations of the will and the word, covering such matters as projections, translocation, shape change, and so on. He covered the mysterious sound that accompanies the use of what common people call sorcery, the exhaustion that comes over a sorcerer after its use, and the single absolute prohibition, that of unmaking.
That's what happened to Tukchik, he concluded. He was so afraid of what would happen if I got my hands on the orb that he forgot he was stepping over the line when he tried to destroy it.
Out in the darkness, the hound howled again, and there was an answering howl from a different direction.
They're getting closer, Geryon whispered. I hope Aunt Paul hurries.
Zakath, however, was still mulling over the things Geryon had told him.
Are you trying to tell me that it was the orb that killed Kruchik, and not Belgarath? He whispered.
No, it wasn't the orb. It was the universe. Do you really want to get into theology?
I'm even more skeptical in that direction.
That's the one thing you cannot afford, Zakath, Geryon said seriously. You have to believe. Otherwise, we will fail, and if we fail, the world fails forever.
The hound howled again, even closer this time.
Keep your voice down, Geryon warned in a tense whisper. The hounds have very sharp ears.
I'm not afraid of a dog, Geryon, no matter how big it is.
That could be a mistake. Being afraid is one of the things that keeps us alive. All right. As closely as I understand it, this is the way it went. Ol created the universe.
I thought it was just spun out of nothingness.
It was. But Ol was the spinner. Then he joined his thought with the awareness of the universe, and the seven gods were born.
The Grolems say it was Torak who made everything.
That's what Torak wanted them to believe. That's one of the reasons I had to kill him. He thought he owned the universe, and that he was more powerful than Ol. He was wrong, and nobody owns the universe. She owns herself, and she makes the rules.
She?
Of course. She is the mother of everything, you, me, that rock, and even this dead tree we're hiding behind. We are all related, I suppose, and the universe won't permit unmaking.
Geryon pulled off his helmet and scratched at his sweaty hair. He sighed.
I'm awfully sorry, Zakath. I know this is coming at you very fast, but we don't have time for subtlety. For some reason we're caught up in this, you and I.
He smiled wryly.
We're both woefully unsuited for the task, I'm afraid. But our mother needs us. Are you up to it?
I am up to most things, I suppose,
Zakath replied in an indifferent tone.
Regardless of what Soradus said back there, I don't really expect to come out of this alive anyway.
Are you sure you're not a Rendish?
Geryon asked suspiciously.
The whole idea is to live, Zakath, not to die. Dying defeats the purpose. Don't do it. I might need you later on.
The voice told me that you're supposed to be a part of this. I think we're walking directly into the ultimate horror. You might have to hold me up when we get there.
Voice?
It's in here. Geryon tapped his forehead. I'll explain that later. You've got enough to think about now.
You hear voices. There is a name for people who hear voices, you know.
Geryon smiled. I'm not really crazy, Zakath. I get a little distracted once in a while, but I've still got a fairly firm grip on reality. There was a sudden shocking sound that echoed through Geryon's head like an explosion.
What was that? Zakath exclaimed.
You heard it too? Geryon was amazed. You shouldn't have been able to hear it.
It shook the earth, Geryon. Look there.
Zakath pointed off toward the north, where a huge pillar of fire was soaring up toward the murky, starless sky.
What is it?
Aunt Paul did something. She's never that clumsy. Listen. The baying of the hound, which had been coming closer and closer as they had been speaking, had broken off into a series of pained yelps. It probably hurt his ears, Geryon said. I know it hurt mine. The hound took up his baying again, and his howls were soon joined by others. The sound began to fade off toward the north and the boiling column of fire. Let's go back, Geryon said. I don't think we need to keep watch here anymore. Belgarath and Belden were both pale and shaken, and even Durnik seemed awed.
She hasn't done anything that noisy since she was about 16, Belden said, blinking in astonishment.
He looked suspiciously at Durnik.
Have you gone and got her pregnant?
Even in the faint light from the overcast sky, Geryon could see his friend blushing furiously.
What would that have to do with it? Belgarath asked.
Oh, it's only a theory of mine, Belden said. I can't prove it, because Pulgara is the only sorceress I know right now, and she's never been in that condition.
I am sure you will get around to explaining it. Eventually.
It's not that complicated, Belgarath. A woman's body gets a little confused when she's carrying a child. It does some peculiar things to her emotions and her thought processes. Focusing the will takes control and concentration. A pregnant woman might just lose her grip on that sort of thing. You see,
he went on at some length to describe the physical, emotional, and intellectual changes involved in pregnancy. He spoke in matter-of-fact, even graphic terms. After a moment, Synedra and Velvet withdrew, firmly taking Eriond with them. A moment later, Durnik joined them.
"Did you work this out all by yourself?"
Belgarath asked.
It gave me something to speculate about while I was watching the cave where Zadar had hidden Torak.
It took you 500 years, then?
I wanted to be sure I'd covered all of the possibilities, Belden shrugged.
Why didn't you just ask Paul? She could have told you immediately.
Belden blinked.
I never thought of that, he admitted.
Belgarath walked away, shaking his head. Some time later they heard a sudden screeching bellow coming from the west through the murky sky.
"Everybody get down," Belgarath hissed. "And keep quiet." "What is it?"
Zakath exclaimed.
"Be still," Belden snapped. "She'll hear you."
From overhead there came the flap of vast wings and a sooty orange bellow of fire. Then the huge beast flew on, screeching and belching out flames.
"What was it?"
Zakath repeated.
"Zandramas," Geryon whispered. "Keep your voice down. She might come back."
They waited.
"She seems to be going toward all the noise Paul kicked up.
Belgarath said in a low voice.
At least she's not looking for us, Silk said with some relief.
Not yet, anyway.
That wasn't actually a dragon, was it?
Zakath asked the old man.
No, not really. Geryon was right. It was Zandramos. That's her other form. Isn't it just a bit ostentatious?
Zandramos seems to have urges in that direction. She can only go for so long without doing something spectacular. It might have something to do with the fact that she is a woman.
I heard that, Belgarath,
Sinedra's voice came threateningly from the far side of the clearing.
Maybe it didn't come out exactly the way I had intended, he half apologized.
The snowy owl came drifting through the forest of dead trees. She hovered for a moment near the fire, then shimmered back into her own form.
What did you do out there, Paul? Belgarath asked her.
I found a dormant volcano, she replied, taking her cloak from Durnik and wrapping it around her shoulders. I reignited it. Did the hounds go off to investigate?
Almost immediately, Geryon assured her.
So did Zandramos, Silk added.
Yes, I saw her, she smiled faintly. It worked out rather well, actually. When she gets there, she will probably find the hounds slinking around and decide to do something about them. I don't think they'll be bothering us any more, and I am sure Zandramos would be filled with chagrin if she found out that she's helping us.
Were you that clumsy on purpose, Paul? Belden asked her.
Of course. I wanted to make enough noise to draw off the hounds, and any grolems who might be in the area. Zandramos was just a bonus. Could you build up the fire again, dear? She said to Durnik. I think it's safe now to start thinking about supper.
They broke camp early the next morning. Polgara's volcano was still belching smoke and ash high into the air, where they mingled with the pervading overcast to cause a sullen kind of gloom. The murky air reeked of sulfur.
"Flying in that isn't going to be very enjoyable," Belden said sourly.
"We need to know what's ahead," Belgarath told him.
"I know that," Belden replied. "I'm not stupid, you know. I was just making an observation."
He bent slightly, changed form, and drove himself into the air with powerful strokes of his wings.
I would pay a fortune to have a hawk like that, Zakath said wistfully. You might have trouble training him, Belgarath said. He is not the most tractable bird in the world.
And the first time you tried to hood him, he would probably rip off one of your fingers, Polgara added. It was nearly noon when Belden returned, flying hard.
Get ready,
he shouted, almost before he had completed the change.
Temple guardsmen, about 10, just over that rise. They are coming this way and they've got a hound with them.
Geryon reached for his sword and he heard Zakath's blade come whistling out of its sheath. No, he said sharply to the Malorian. Stay out of it.
Not a chance, Zakath replied.
I'll take care of the dog, Tzadi said, reaching into the pouch at his belt for some of the powder he had used so effectively in Karanda.
They spread out with their weapons in their hands as Eriond led the women to the rear. The hound came over the hill first, and it stopped when it saw them. Then it wheeled and loped back.
That's it, Belgara said.
They know we are here now.
The guardsmen came over the top of the hill at a rolling trot. Geryon noticed that they were not carrying lances, but each mail-clad man held a sword and wore a shield. They paused for a moment to assess the situation. Then they charged. The hound came first, running smoothly and with his lips peeled back from his teeth in a fearful snarl. Tzadi spurred forward to meet him, holding a fistful of the powder. When the hound reared up on its hind legs to drag the eunuch from his saddle, Sadi coolly hurled the powder full into the animal's face. The hound shook his massive head, trying to clear his eyes. Then he sneezed once. His eyes grew wide, and his snarl turned into a terrified whimper. He shrieked suddenly, a dreadful half-human sound. Then he turned and fled, howling in terror.
"Let's go," Geryon barked, and he charged toward the oncoming guardsmen.
These were more serious opponents than the Darshivan soldiers had been, so the choices in dealing with them were greatly reduced. One, somewhat larger than his fellows, and astride a heavy-bodied warhorse, was leading the charge, and Geryon cut him out of his saddle with a single stroke of Irongrip's great sword. Geryon heard the sound of steel on steel off to his left, but he dared not take his eyes off the still-charging guardsmen. He chopped two more from their saddles, and Kretchen crashed into the horse of a third, sending the rider and his mount tumbling. Then Geryon was through the ranks of their enemies, and he wheeled around. Sakath was being hard-pressed by two mailed men. He had, it appeared, already felled a third, but then the other two had come at him, one from either side. Geryon kicked at Kretchen's flanks, intending to go to his friend's aid, but Toth was already there. With one huge hand, he plucked one of Zakath's attackers from his saddle and hurled him headfirst at a large boulder at the side of the road. Zakath turned on his other enemy, deftly parried a couple of strokes, then smoothly ran the man through. Silk's daggers were already doing their deadly work. One guardsman was aimlessly riding around in a circle, doubled over in his saddle and clutching at the dagger hilt protruding from his stomach. The acrobatic little Drasnian then leaped from his horse and landed behind the saddle of a confused guardsman. With a wide sweep of his arm, Silk drove a dagger into the side of the man's neck. Blood gushed from the guardsman's mouth as he fell to the ground. The remaining two armored men tried to flee, but Durnik and Belden were already on them, clubbing at them with cudgel and axe. They tumbled senselessly from their horses and lay twitching in the dirt of the road.
"Are you all right?"
Geryon asked Zakath.
"I'm fine, Geryon."
The Malorian was breathing hard, though.
"Your training seems to be coming back to you."
"I had a certain amount of incentive."
Zakath looked critically at the bodies littering the road.
"When this is all over, I think I'll order this organization disbanded," he said. "The notion of private armies offends me for some reason."
"Did any of them get away?" Silk asked, looking around.
"Not a one," Durnik told him.
"Good. We wouldn't want somebody going for help." Silk frowned. "What were they doing this far south?" he asked.
"Probably trying to stir up enough trouble to draw the Darshivan troops away from Hervan's main body," Belgarath replied.
"I think we will have to be alert from now on. This whole area could be crawling with soldiers at any time now." He looked at Belden. "Why don't you have a look around? See if you can find out what Hervan's up to and where the Darshivans are. We don't want to get caught between them."
"It's going to take a while," the hunchback replied. "Darshiva is a fairly large place."
"You had better get started then, hadn't you?"
They took shelter that night in the ruins of another village. Belgarath and Geryon scouted the surrounding region, but found it to be deserted. The following morning, the two wolves ranged out ahead of the rest of the party, but again they encountered no one. It was almost evening when Belden returned.
"Ervan outflanked your army," he told Zakath. "He's got at least one general who knows what he's doing. His troops are in the Dalesian Mountains now, and they're coming south at a forced march. Ateska had to stay near the coast to meet the Darshivans and their elephants."
"Did you see Ervan?" Belgarath asked him.
Belden cackled an ugly little laugh.
"Oh, yes. He's absolutely mad now. He's got 24 soldiers carrying him on a throne, and he's doing parlor tricks to demonstrate his divinity. I doubt if he could focus enough of his will right now to wilt a flower.
Is Nahas with him?
Belden nodded.
Right beside him, whispering in his ear. I'd say he needs to keep a tight grip on his plaything. If Ervan starts giving the wrong orders, his army could wind up wandering around in those mountains for a generation.
Belgoroth frowned.
This doesn't exactly fit, he said. Every bit of information we picked up pointed to the probability that Nahas and Morja were concentrating on each other.
Maybe they've already had it out,
the hunchback shrugged.
And Morja lost.
I doubt it. That sort of thing would have made a lot of noise, and we would have heard it.
Who knows why demons do anything?
Belden scowled, scratching at his matted hair.
Let's face it, Belgorath. Zandramos knows that she has to go to Kel. So does Nahas. I think this is turning into a race. We are all trying to be the first one to get to Saradus.
I get the feeling that I am overlooking something, Belgoroth said. Something important.
You'll think of it. It might take you a couple of months, but you'll think of it.
Belgoroth ignored that. The heavy pall of smoke and ash began to subside as evening drew on, but the prevailing gloom of thick overcast remained. Darshiva was still a land of dead trees, fungus, and stagnant water. Increasingly, that last became a problem. The supplies of water they had carried with them from the Malorian camp on the shores of the Magan had long since been exhausted. As night fell, the others continued along the road, and Belgorath and Geryon ranged ahead as wolves again, searching this time not so much for trouble as for fresh water. Their sharp noses easily detected the stale reek of long-standing pools, and they passed them without slowing. It was in a blasted forest of long, dead trees that Geryon encountered another wolf. She was gaunt and bedraggled, and she limped painfully on her left front paw. She looked at him warily, baring her teeth in warning. He sat down on his haunches to show his peaceable intent.
"What is it you do here?"
she asked him in the language of wolves. "I am going from one place to another place," he replied politely. "I have no intention to hunt in this place, which is yours. I seek only clean water to drink."
"Clean water comes from the ground on the other side of that high place."
She glanced toward a hill deeper in the forest. "Drink your fill." "I have others with me as well," he told her.
"Your pack?"
She came cautiously closer to him and sniffed.
"You have the scent of the man-things about you," she accused.
"Some of those in my pack are man-things," he admitted. "Where is your pack?"
"Gone,"
she told him.
"When there were no longer creatures to hunt in this place, they went into the mountains."
She looked at her injured foot.
"I could not follow."
"Where is your mate?"
"He no longer runs or hunts. I visit his bones sometimes."
She said it with such simple dignity that a lump caught in Geryon's throat.
"How do you hunt with that hurt in your paw?" "I lie in wait for unwary things. All are very small. I have not eaten my fill for many seasons." "Grandfather,"
Geryon sent his thought out,
"I need you."
"Trouble?"
the old man's thought came back.
"Not that kind. Oh, I found water, by the way. But don't come in here running. You will frighten her."
"Her?"
"You will understand when you get here." "To whom were you speaking?"
she asked.
"You heard?"
He was startled.
"No, but your manner was that of one who is speaking."
We can talk of that after some time has passed. My pack leader is coming to this place. He must make the decisions.
That is only proper.
She lay down on her belly and continued to lick at her paw.
How did you come to be hurt? The man things conceal things beneath the leaves. I stepped on one of those things and it bit my paw. Its jaws were very strong.
Belgarath came trotting through the dead forest. He stopped and dropped to his haunches, his tongue lolling out. The she-wolf laid her muzzle submissively on the ground in a gesture of respect.
What's the problem?
Belgarath's thought came to Geryon. She caught her foot in a trap. Her pack left her behind and her mate died. She is crippled and starving.
It happens sometimes.
I'm not going to leave her behind to die. Belgarath gave him a long, steady look.
No, he replied. I don't imagine you would. And I would think less of you if you did.
He approached the she-wolf.
How is it with you, little sister?
He asked in the language of wolves, sniffing at her.
Not well, revered leader, she sighed. I will not hunt much longer, I think.
You will join my pack, and we will see to your hurt. We will bring you such meat as you require. Where are your young? I can smell them on your fur.
Geryon gave a startled little whine.
There is but one remaining, the she-wolf replied, and he is very weak.
Take us to him. We will make him strong again.
As you decide, revered leader,
she said with automatic obedience.
Paul, Belgarath sent out his thought, come here. Take your mother's form.
The note of command in his voice was incisive and far more wolf-like than human. There was a startled silence.
Yes, father, Belgarath replied.
When she arrived a few moments later, Geryon recognized her form from the characteristic white streak above her left brow. What is it, father? She asked.
Our little sister here is hurt. It is her left front paw. Can you fix it?
She approached the she-wolf and sniffed at the paw.
It's ulcerated, she said with her thought.
Nothing seems to be broken. Several days with a poultice ought to do it.
Fix it, then. She also has a puppy. We will need to find him as well.
She looked at him, a question in her golden eyes.
She and her puppy are joining our pack. They will be going with us.
Then he sent his thought to her.
It is Geryon's idea, actually. He refuses to leave her behind.
It's very noble. But is it practical?
Probably not. But it is his decision. He thinks it is the right thing to do, and I more or less agree with him.
You are going to have to explain some things to her, though.
She doesn't have much reason to trust man, and I don't want her to go into a panic when the others catch up with us.
He turned to the she-wolf.
Everything will be well again, little sister. Now, let us go find your young one.
Chapter 21 The half-grown pup was so emaciated that it could not stand. So, Belgarath resorted to the simple expedient of picking it up by the scruff of its neck between her jaws and carrying it out of the den.
Go meet the others, she instructed Geryon. Don't let them get too close until I've had time to talk with our little sister here. Bring back food, though. Put as much as you can carry in a sack and come right back.
Yes, Aunt Paul.
He loped back toward the road, changed into his own form, and waited for his friends.
We've got a little bit of a problem, he told them when they arrived. We've found an injured female just up ahead in those woods. She's starving, and she has a young one as well.
A baby? Sinedra exclaimed.
Not exactly, he said, going to one of the food packs and beginning to load a stout canvas bag with meat and cheese.
Well, you just said...
It's a puppy, Sinedra. The female is a she-wolf.
What?
It's a wolf. She got her paw caught in a trap. She can't run, so she can't hunt. She'll be coming with us, at least until her paw heals.
But...
No buts. She's coming with us. Dernick, can you work out some way we can carry her without having the horses go wild?
I'll think of something, the smith replied.
Under the circumstances, don't you think this altruism might be misplaced?
Tuddy asked mildly.
No, Garion said, tying the top of the sack shut. I don't. There's a hill in the middle of those woods. Stay on this side of it until we can persuade her that we don't mean to harm her. There's water there, but it's too close to her den. We'll have to wait a bit before we can water the horses.
What's got you so angry? Silk asked him.
If I had the time, I'd look up the man who set that trap and break his leg. In several places. I've got to go back now. She and the puppy are very hungry.
He slung the sack over his shoulder and stalked off.